It is 93.3 WMMR in Philadelphia. It is Brent Porsche. And let's see if I push this button correctly. I should conference into Pierre Robert. Hey, Pierre, you there?
I am. Can you hear me okay, Brent?
I can hear you very well. So we just got word, apparently after a long illness, we lost David Crosby at the age of 82. Have you heard anything by chance?
Well, it's funny that you mention it because a friend of mine who works with Jackson Browne and was on tour with CSN and CSNY, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, called me about 10 minutes before you texted me and said, you know, I just heard it through the grapevine. And then my phone started blowing up from the West Coast. And then I turned on the radio and you were just announcing it. And I go, I went F, a giant F. And I go, but, you know, I also must confess, I guess I wasn't surprised. Crosby was not in the best of health. And I don't mean because of drug use. You know, when we heard about Lisa Marie Presley recently, I think she's only 53 or 54. She had a long history of challenges with drugs and a lot of, you know, sadness in her life. Crosby did have a huge, I don't, by the way, know that that's why she died, but 53 or 54 is pretty young to die if in her case. But with Crosby, I mean, like a cat, he's almost had nine lives. He, you know, started as a member of the Byrds with Roger McGuinn, you know, 8 Miles High and those wonderful Bird songs, and added his harmony. He started as a folk singer before that, met up with the Byrds, and then became part of that Southern California group of musicians ranging from Don Henley and Glenn Frey of the Eagles and Jackson Browne and J.D. Souther and James Taylor and this whole clique of musicians that he eventually fell in with. And then he met Graham Nash. Well, he'd met Stephen Stills somewhere down the line, and then Graham Nash had flown in on a tour with the Hollies and had the occasion to meet Crosby. And then at some point they invited Graham over to Stephen's house, or maybe it was Joni Mitchell's house, and they sang a song Stephen had just written called Not Helplessly Hoping. It was You Don't Need to Cry. And the three of them sang it, and that was the birth of Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And Neil was later added to that mix, and the rest is history. But they were, you know, an ongoing huge success story, and yet David always had a lot of challenges. He always smoked a lot of pot, but that, you know, was never out of control. And then into the 80s, he got a huge, what do you call that, smokable cocaine? It's not crack, it's... I don't know what it's called, but he in the late 70s and early 80s, he would smoke this cocaine that was really potent and really addictive, and he fell into serious disrepair and was in and out of court, and they still toured together, but about 85 or 86, he was arrested for drugs in Dallas, went to prison for a couple of years, sobered up, and came back, and back with CSN and back with eventually Neil, and they stayed together for a long, long time. The four of them kind of fell apart again in the last couple of years. But David's health, even after he had kicked drugs, which was a long time ago, he'd had to have maybe 10 years after that a liver transplant. He had done so much damage to his body. And he had a lot of other health issues. He had retired a year or two ago, and you and I were talking off the air this afternoon about selling your music catalog. He had sold his music catalog, so he had enough money to retire and live in Santa Barbara with his wife Jan and his son Django. And he had stopped playing and touring, and but put out over the last couple of years a number of solo albums that were very critically acclaimed. But there was pretty much of a strong fallout between him and Graham particularly, and Stills and Neil. So that amazing combination had fallen apart. But I hadn't heard from him. I saw a picture of him with some people that work with him that I know that looked like he was practicing on stage. But when your press release had said a long illness, I have no idea what it was or what had happened to him, you know. So I just got this out of the blue, and it very sad.
I have a question for you in regards to the formation of Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Is it true that Buffalo Springfield was up on stage and Crosby joined them at the Monterey Pop Festival, which eventually contributed to his dismissal from the Birds?
That is a partial truth because the Birds played the Monterey Pop Festival, I think this is 1967, and Buffalo Springfield played, and one of the members of Buffalo Springfield didn't show up. And they asked Crosby to step in for him, and he did for that gig. And then as time, as the Birds continued, not much longer, into 68, he didn't like the direction they were going. He was a little more political. He wanted to talk about the war in Vietnam. His songwriting was tending to go in that direction. Roger McGuinn, pretty much the leader of the Birds, didn't like that. And they ultimately fired him somewhere around 68. And somewhere in that process, CSN came out of the Buffalo Springfield, which had Stephen Stills and Neil Young in it. They had fallen apart. Graham Nash met up with Crosby and Stills on a trip with the Hollies to America and a stop in Southern California, where Mama Cass of the Mamas and the Papas introduced Graham to David, and then eventually David to Stephen. They sang together, and Stills and Crosby took Graham to the airport to fly back to England, and Stephen looked over at David and said, "Which one of us is going to kidnap him? We can't let him go back." And he did go back, but he went back and immediately quit the Hollies and moved to California. That was the beginning of CSN. And they put out that first album from which you just played, Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, with all those amazing songs on it. And they started to tour, and Ahmet Erdogan from Atlantic Records said, "You need a fourth person to fill out the touring thing." And Ahmet had suggested perhaps Neil, because he knew the Buffalo Springfield had Neil in it, and Neil was always a combative and very fascinating character Buffalo Springfield was always breaking up and fighting and getting back together. And then he joined CSNY, and they had some legendary tours, but many, many breakups. Crosby once said, "The four of us are like nitroglycerin. Drop any one of them, and the whole thing goes up."
To say the least.
It came together and fell apart more times than Elizabeth Taylor got married. I mean, it was just amazing. We're losing so many people, Brent. It's just left and right. And I think somewhere inside I knew this day was coming, and I knew his health wasn't good. I saw him the last time he came through to the Keswick Theater. Sang great, but, you know, he had a hard time moving. He was not in good physical health. He didn't like to work out, and I don't know what it was that got him, but it looks like time eventually, did catch up with him.
Did you happen to catch the documentary, the Cameron Crowe documentary, David Crosby, Remember My Name?
Yes, I did. It's fascinating, because he tells the tale of his story, obviously better than anyone can. Did you see it?
I did not. No, I did not. I was wondering, I got to check it out now.
Yeah, the story of that whole Laurel Canyon scene off of Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood is a series of canyons that go up into the hills. And Laurel Canyon, perhaps the most famous of them all at the top of that. I think Jack Nicholson still lives up there. But all these musicians would interact with each other. It was not uncommon to see members of the Mamas and the Papas and the Monkees. And Stephen Stills auditioned for the Monkees after the Buffalo Springfield, oddly enough. All these bands would knew each other, and they'd all go over to each other's house. In fact, when CSNY was going out on their first tour as together, they practiced at Peter Tork's house from the Monkees in the Hollywood Hills. So there's a lot of amazing stories of the ins and outs and the ups and downs. Graham Nash was with that guy from the beginning, and he picked him up many, many times. And Graham kind of was the glue that kept the four of them together, because it was a very explosive, brilliant when it worked, but pretty, you know, pretty destructive when it didn't combination. And sorry if I'm going on too long. I don't want to go on. But anyway, Graham just kind of got tired of it and said, I can't do this anymore. And so has continued to tour. And he's 80, but, I mean, he's in great shape. He's always taking good care of himself. I don't know the health of Steven, but of the four of them, I knew that Crosby was in the worst shape.
Would you like to play a song?
Well, I mean, you know, if you have time, I would suggest Almost Cut My Hair, because it's a great piece of music from Deja Vu, the second album, and the first with Neil. It sort of, you know, tells the whole story. And Crosby, you know, Crosby's famous line from it, you got to let your freak flag fly, is perfect. So I would leave you with that, and we'll do some more tomorrow.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you so much, Pierre Robert. Again, remembering the life of David Crosby. We lost him earlier today at the age of 82. Here's Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and Almost Cut My Hair. It's 93.3 WMMR Philadelphia.
We'll now proceed to entangle the entire area.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.